Well, the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. And the faker's gonna fake, 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 baby. I'm just gonna make, 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 make. Making luck, making luck. A Dominion Podcast.
Oh, I meant to ask you.
Yeah.
How many people entered the raffle?
It was actually our most successful raffle yet. We had several thousand entries.
I bet.
Yeah, no, we had several thousand entries, and
how many entries did Dylan do?
It doesn't matter. And so I just want to say I'm honored that you guys have such faith in me, being backed up with your faith in me to come up with a new raffle prize. And it's been our most popular raffle yet, so next raffle, I've decided we're doing it again. In fact, next raffle, the winner is going to get 10 more entries into the next raffle.
Wow.
Yes, we're
going to
get
10.
Yeah,
who says inflation is not a problem?
Yeah, we're going to keep on with the fiat system of the raffle. And... and congratulations, Dylan, for winning 3 entries into the next raffle. And if he wins this one,
whoa,
he could get 10 more entries into the next raffle.
Wow, that's so many.
Yeah, so I definitely want to wish luck all of you out there. If 3 of you team up, you might be able to beat Dylan. Or just enter more times than he does. I don't know.
No, that's not a thing, is it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't care.
All right.
Anyway.
Welcome to Making Luck, a Dominion podcast.
Yeah, a fiat podcast.
My name is Adam, and this is Jake. Hi, Jake.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won a lot of games at Dominion just now.
How many did we play?
I don't know, but that's how many I won.
No, I won one. And watch back. I promise you I did.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, good times.
Anyway, we last episode talked about Apothecary.
Native Village.
Yeah, or Native Village or something. I don't know. It all kind of blends together at a certain point when you've played that kingdom enough times.
Yeah, and when we've already done an episode on Apothecary.
Yeah, right.
No bigs. It's fine. It's fine. It's
yeah.
Fine.
So if you're new to the podcast, what we're talking about is that at the end of last week's podcast, we laid out a kingdom where we went over what we thought was going to be good, and we spent the week playing it, and then we're going to go into what actually played out and what turned out to be the dominant strategy on that kingdom.
Or, you know, what turned out to be one of the many strategies that seemed like it could probably be best, depending on what happens to you.
Yeah, how things go. What your seating order happens to be, things like that, yeah.
Usually the first player is just going to win the game, so if you're second player, if you want to expedite the process, you could just concede.
Yeah,
it's pretty solid strat.
Yeah, so yesterday week, we...
nice save.
We did our episode on Native Village, and so we definitely wanted to work that into the kingdom. Yeah. So, Adam, did you want to read off the cards?
No, but I'll do it anyway.
Okay.
We have Apothecary, Native Village, Market Square, Village, Herald, Workers' Village, Bazaar, Cobbler, Stables, and Wild Hunt. One more time for our audio-only listeners. We have Apothecary, Native Village, Market Square, Village, Herald, Workers' Village, Bazaar, Cobbler, Stables, and Wild Hunt.
Yeah, so this kingdom was kind of interesting. There turned out to be quite a few different directions you could go with it, I think. At least a few. I agree.
Yeah, there's multiple different things you can focus on. So I think a point of contention last time was Wild Hunt. How much do you go for it?
Do you go for it at all?
Yeah, and so Jake said that Wild Hunt was going to be important here, and I said, you get probably a Wild Hunt if your opponent's getting them, because you can't let that go uncontested. But what I thought was best was just focusing on an Apothecary Native Village deck with support from mostly Cobbler and Herald. And one of the plus buy cards as well. Workers Village or Market Square, whatever you can afford. And just aiming to blitz down single province turns. And, you know, I still feel pretty good that something like that is resembling the best strategy. Although, I don't think you necessarily go for Cobbler all the time. I think if your draws are right, you pick up a second potion, even if you're contested, just so you can boss that Apothecary split, because Apothecary turns out to be real important.
Yeah, the Apothecaries played in whatever deck you were building here. You definitely needed those. And if you lost the split on that by enough, you might just kind of be out.
Yeah. I think Apothecary is important because there's no trashing. And so
yeah.
Apothecary really helps you mitigate the fact that you have seven coppers in your deck at least that you can't get rid of.
And
also sets up your native villages, yeah.
Right, and native villages are the only way to get these states out of your deck, which, like, whenever anything is the only way to get estates out of your deck, it's kind of just you de facto,
you
just go for it.
You do it.
So,
yeah,
the other thing was that if you were going for that, for the Wild Hunt strategy, that's even kind of more important because you have an influx of estates. Now, do you go for Wild Hunt, though? That turned into an interesting question.
Yeah, I kind of think you don't. Now, like, that doesn't mean that if you go for it, you're going to lose, because I think it's really close after playing several games with it.
And if your opponent goes for it, you do need to get a couple to contest them. Like, you can't just let your opponent go uncontested on Wild Hunts, or he's just going to have too much leverage to get too many points on you.
Right, they can just let the points sit on the pile. There's no way for you to... Like, if you don't have a Wild Hunt in your deck, and it's my turn, I can just leave the points there, because there's no way you can steal them from me before next turn.
Yeah.
So I can just let that get as high as I want. And, you know, I can just keep on buying Wild Hunts and cobbling some other villages and stuff and just play an increasing number of Wild Hunts. And that's going to outpace however many provinces you can get before the pile's empty.
Well, and it's not purely a question about pacing, too. Like, any source of points that's not provinces is factors into endgame positioning as well.
Yeah, outpace was the wrong word.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily completely the wrong word, because, like, outpace factors in, but the other part of it is endgame positioning, being comfortable buying those second-to-last province or letting the piles get low, too, because you have this point lead.
Points are great.
Points are good to have.
When you win because you have them.
Man, this is insightful stuff.
Yeah. We have a really good podcast.
Man, I love
mostly because it's me. Like, I'm such a great host, and I'm so good at Dominion.
I'd say I'm at least 50%, maybe.
55?
Yeah.
You're 55%, and I'm 555%.
That's right. We give 110%.
610%.
Whatever Adam said.
That's, you know what? Whatever Adam said, that's pretty much, that could be the, welcome to Making Luck.
Whatever
Adam
said
podcast.
Where Adam says things and I rephrase them.
Sometimes you just agree without rephrasing them. Because you gotta mix it up, right?
I probably do that, yeah.
But when you think
about it, I do kind of just say what you say, but alter it a little bit.
Yeah. That was good. But, like, really, when you're in the presence of such a high-caliber Dominion World Champion like me, like, I mean, you have two choices, right? You can either agree with me. Okay, you have three choices. You can either agree with me, you can agree with me and rephrase, or you can just be wrong.
Man, I hope I never find myself in that position. I don't know what I would do.
Well, I mean, and you know what? You like to mix it up, so I appreciate that for the sake of our listeners who really just want to listen to me, right?
Yeah, but you know, you gotta have two hosts, because
Adam
needs to have his pH balanced.
My pH.
Yeah. His charismatic host pH.
Yeah.
Whatever.
CHPH.
Wonder how long until he figures out that I'm not real. Anyway, so the episode today is going to actually be on a card that a lot of people have questions about called Stonemason.
Oh, yeah. It's a good card.
Yeah. So you want to read us the text of Stonemason?
Yeah, sure. So Stonemason is from the Guild's expansion. It's a two-cost action, but there's a little plus sign by the two, which we'll talk about. It says, trash a card from your hand, gain two cards, each costing less than it. And then the dividing line says, when you buy this, you may overpay for it. If you do, gain two action cards, each costing the amount you overpaid. So
yeah, this is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about just rules mechanics clarification.
Yes, because there are some things that you might not expect with Stonemason, I'd say.
Yeah. So like when you play the card and you're gaining two cheaper things, you can gain whatever you want. You can gain duchies or whatever. But
and they can be two different things.
Yeah, they can always. Yeah, they can be two different things. But when you overpay for the card, you have to gain actions. So they can still be different, but they have to be actions, and of course they have to be the same price because, you know, it's the amount you overpaid that's static.
Yeah, whereas if you're playing the on play effect and trashing something and gaining, they can be different costs. They just have to be cheaper than the thing you trashed.
Right, and they don't have to be actions if you're gaining when you played the card. Right?
Yeah.
And then also, you can overpay by potion. You cannot overpay by debt. And you have to overpay more than zero. So if you got peddlers to be free, you can't buy a stonemason and overpay zero to get peddlers. You can't do that.
Yeah, which is interesting because it's not because zero is not a number in Dominion. It's because that's not overpaying. That's just buying it. All the gains are mandatory. You cannot choose at any point in stonemason to not gain one of the things that you're able to gain.
Yeah, so like trashing estates with stonemason feels real bad.
You're not actually fitting estates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess you could gain poor houses.
Yeah, there we go.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
You could gain coppers or curses.
Usually what you do is the coppers.
Ruins. Yeah. You could ferry a 3-cost.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay.
I don't care.
Stonemason does... So like, what's the function of Stonemason on the board? It does... It's kind of a high execution card. Like, it's kind of, you need to sort of indulge your Dominion game sense and creativity to utilize this card to its fullest, I'd say.
I remember when Guilds first came out, and I saw this card, and I'm like, oh, this card is really bad at trashing, but trashing's still good, so I guess I'll do that.
Yeah.
And then I lost a lot of games with Stonemason.
Well, right, so Stonemason does three things. Stonemason, and those are the things we're going to hit on and talk about in context.
Hey, Stonemason.
It does...
We're going to hit on your three things.
It has a thinning option. It does act as a trasher. We're going to talk about that first because it's the weakest thing it does.
It's like the base use case, you know?
Yeah.
In big money Stonemason, that's what you're using it for.
If you're playing big money Stonemason. And then there's the overpay effect, which is where you gain things when you buy it. And that's 90% of what you use it for, maybe.
90.55?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay.
And then we're going to hit on that. And then finally, we're going to talk about the on-play effect, where you play Stonemason and trash something and gain cards. Because that's, you know, another thing it'll do sometimes.
Yeah, gains cards. So good. So, it's bad at thinning cards.
Real bad. It's almost not a thinning option. Like, it technically trashes cards, but it almost doesn't. Like, it's so bad at it that, like...
Yeah,
so
it's pretty bad.
For one thing, it's a terminal action that reduces your hand size by 2 to trash a card. Because you play it, and then you trash the card out of your hand. And also, it doesn't even thin the estates. Because, like, it's making your deck worse one way or the other. Either you trash a copper... and leave the estates in your deck, and now your deck is more proportionate dead cards than not dead cards. Or you trash the estate and put 2 coppers in your deck, and now your deck is even thicker than when you started. So it's not
bad.
A good thinning option.
It feels pretty bad. You don't want to do that.
Occasionally, I'd say there are boards where thinning is so, so important. The payload is so good, and it's so important to be thin for it, that you'll buy Stonemason just to thin with it. But man, you need a really compelling reason to do that.
I believe compelling reason can be there is no other trashing. It's Transmute that is the only card for trashing that I would prefer Stonemason to.
Even if it's the only trashing, I might just ignore trashing that game. Because, like, I need it to be the only trashing, and there's some reason I really want to line cards up.
Well, like, I mean, lining cards up is great, but, like, I see where you're saying. Like, a lot of times, this isn't going to cut the mustard.
Yeah.
Like, this is worse than Trade Route, and a lot of times, Trade Route does not cut the mustard when it comes to thinning.
If Stonemason's the only thinning, and there's, like, any other form of deck control, like, there's a lot of draw or sifting, or you can just not have deck control and just play sloggy big money, like, a lot of the time, Stonemason is so bad at trashing, you just ignore trashing if it's the only option.
Yeah, I mean, big money doesn't really like trashing unless it's estates, and Stonemason's not good at trashing estates.
Yeah.
So don't
right.
do that.
Yeah, so...
On the other hand, I don't think you should ignore it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
it's not
thinning is... Thinning is so good that, like, even the worst cards in the world that do it are good enough sometimes. I mean, Stonemason is primarily a payload card, not a deck control card.
Yeah,
even
right.
though the deck control component is, hey, you can thin cards with this. But, like, it's really good at payload. And the fact that he even has this deck control component, as bad as it is kind of unusual, right? And we did an episode on Develop where we talked about this some.
Yes.
And this
actually,
is kind of
notice,
along the same lines, yeah.
You're going to notice quite a few parallels to our discussion on Develop when we talk about Stonemason, I'd say, because they occupy a very similar space, I think, in terms of like how you utilize them and what space your head needs to be in when you're buying these cards.
Yeah, like they suck at trashing, but they do it. And then you can also gain two cards by trashing an expensive thing.
Yeah.
And like that's... That's amazing, but that's the second half of the podcast, right?
Right, yeah. So, like, what are... I don't know. Just off the top of your head, what are some situations where thinning is so good that you would be willing to put a Stonemason in your deck just to do it?
Well, there... I mean, there would just have to be good draw.
Yeah,
just
I mean...
good deck control. I mean, Stonemason does the thinning part, but, like, the rest of the deck control needs to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also thinking about, like, maybe there's some kind of crazy situation where there's, like, groundskeepers and battlefield, and you really need to be lining up your groundskeepers when you're gaining green cards, or maybe you're looking at Horn of Plenty and, or Highways with plus buy or something.
I mean, these are great payloads, but, like, Stonemason's a really good payload card. So,
yeah.
Like, I think that's a lot of times enough payload to... go for it.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's not always going to be the case, but you can do some really cool stuff.
Definitely.
Just by playing Stonemason. So, like, there's one question that's related to the base use before we fully commit to hitting on this other part of the card, which seems to be more attractive.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's say that...
I love hitting on attractive concepts.
Yeah. Me too.
What
if Stonemason is the only thinning, but I plan to overpay later, so I'm going to have Stonemasons in my deck later. So do I open with a Stonemason, or do I just wait and then get the Stonemason later after I've overpaid, so I don't have too many of them?
Oh, man, I don't have an answer to that. It seems
well,
like...
it depends on a lot, right?
Yeah.
But I think that most of the time, you probably want to wait for it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's kind of like... when you're, like, buying Cemetery or Doctor, too, for thinning purposes, you just wait until you have a good enough opportunity to buy it under more optimal circumstances than thinning early.
Yeah, sure. Cemetery, yes. Doctor costs three.
Doctor's a little bit weirder of an example, sure, but yeah.
I would have said something like Trade.
Yeah.
Would be pretty
right.
good for that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Stonemason does some other stuff, right?
Yeah, Stonemason does a lot of other stuff, and that's the reason we felt compelled to make an episode on it. Because
yeah, this episode's been pretty lame so far.
Yeah, let's
I haven't talked nearly enough about how great I am.
Yeah, and how great Stonemason is, too. Because that's the secondary part of this podcast.
Nice one.
So, like, Stonemason, we're going to go from the top of the text and go skip over the middle and go right down to the bottom of the text.
Yeah. That
yeah.
middle.
We're going to come back to it. But, like,
whatever.
When you buy Stonemason, what happens?
Well, so I think this is the most powerful part of the card because it has the immediate effect, right?
Yeah.
So, like, essentially...
90% of the time.
90.55, yeah. So it basically allows you to pay $2 more to get an extra copy of some other card that you might have already bought. So, like, let's say I wanted some fiver, and I hit 7 instead. I can pay the 2 extra to get an extra fiver for the low, low cost of only putting a Stonemason in your deck.
Right. So that's interesting that we're talking about putting the Stonemason into your deck as a cost. Like, this is assuming that the Stonemason is a bad card for the deck.
Yeah, I used air quotes.
Yeah.
I didn't vocalize the air quotes.
And,
sorry.
Like, what kind of card is Stonemason for the deck? We're going to transition into that later, but, like, the concept of having an extra gain that you don't need to generate a buy for in your turn is super powerful. The idea that you could hit seven and, or even if, like, you know, you weren't hitting seven, if you, like, hit 10 but don't have an extra buy and you want to gain two of this amazing fiver, like, the fact that you don't have to be able to generate a buy in your turn to get that extra gain makes Stonemason a really significant addition to most kingdoms.
Yeah, it's like, you don't have to put the plus buy card in your deck first. You can just have the great turn kind of earlier without, like, putting the setup into it. You don't have to collide your plus buy card with your amazing turn, in a sense.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a step that you don't have to do. So that's really nice. And I think even without considering Stonemason's utility, which is non-zero and potentially very high.
Yeah.
But even without considering that, I think most of the time, when you have some fiver that you want a lot of, or, like, some fivers, like, if you wanted to gain two of these expensive action cards, normally, like, it's just really good to put this Stonemason, even if it's totally dead, into your deck. Because gaining two of those cards right now without the extra buy is so good.
Yeah, right.
And granted, that's not always the case, right?
Right. I mean, whenever we're talking about something in a vacuum like that, of course there are going to be exceptions. But, like, a lot of the time I'd say that's true.
Yeah, so I think things that really push you towards this direction are, number one, I just care about getting a lot of copies of this card.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm looking at Minion or Governor. Like, the split matters.
We're coming back to Groundskeeper, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, these power non-terminal fivers that you want to pile out and
sure.
make sure you win the split. So Mason's great for that, because you get twice as many of them, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, while Stonemason itself may not help you get more of them in a lot of cases, you're still getting more of them, and sometimes just getting more of them before the pile's gone, it's very important to you.
Yeah, like, when that overpay effect of being able to burst your economy into multiple copies is, of course, going to shine when we're looking at a pile that's hotly contested. And, like, of course, that's going to be very powerful when that contested pile is a fiver. Like, we could even get into something like Distant Lands with that. It doesn't even have to be non-terminal. But,
you know, non-terminals are great to get a lot of.
But even
in that case, like, that touches on the fact that these don't have to be the same cards you gain.
Yeah.
So, like,
right.
you get a village and a terminal, and
yeah.
it's fine. Like, you get that flexibility as long as they cost the same.
Yeah, maybe you went City Wharf, and those are, again, two cards that are really important to get a lot of. Stonemason helps you do that. If you're looking at another pile that's going to be really hotly contested, like Sauna of Onto, might come
up.
Yeah,
you can get that last Sauna and then wish. No, I'm kidding.
No, but yeah, I mean, so, like, any time where there's...
So, Ophanto, right?
Yeah. Or, yeah, I mean, I don't know, if you set it up early enough and get two Saunas off your Stonemason, I think you do that.
Probably already winning the game by that point.
Yeah.
I mean, Ophanto is the important card of that pile.
Sure.
And that's the one I would be focusing on, but still, like, you know, Stonemason's great for helping you get those, and, you know, that's a split pile, so the split becomes even more magnified.
Yeah.
And the impact of Stonemason is greater.
Yeah.
So I think the presence of some kind of a village allows not only for you to have this higher flexibility to make gaining those two cards better, but it also increases the utility of Stonemason. Because now you have this extra terminal space, potentially, or the potential for extra terminal space. I guess it's the same thing that I just said. But, like, you could have extra terminal space... And now you can play this Stonemason. And that Stonemason is doing something for you. Like, Hopper's
yeah.
dumb, and I want it gone, so get it out of my face, you noob.
And we haven't even touched on another aspect of Stonemason's gaining, which is when it's giving you a... We've talked about how great getting that extra gain is in the middle of your turn without generating it, but we haven't really talked about when you're getting a quote-unquote deal on the second card that you gain. Like, when you're like, netting coin value out of having gained with Stonemason.
Yeah, like, if you buy anything that costs three or more, like, if I want to buy a village, and I have five, I can get two villages with a Stonemason, and I
yeah.
couldn't do that with $5.
And even better.
Even if I had a buy.
So,
know?
Like, that netted you, you know...
$55.
That netted you $1 when you did
and
it.
And a buy.
Whereas if you are buying something more expensive, like you are gaining fivers with it, you know, then you're netting $3 when you gain the two of them with Stonemason. So it's kind of like develop when Adam took his shirt off in that discussion.
Hold on,
he
let me
said,
take it off now.
Yeah, he said he took his shirt off and said, you know, in a weird way, it's at its best. It's giving you the most value when it's trashing expensive stuff. That's true of Stonemason's trashing as well, but also if it's gaining. Like, it's at its best when you're gaining two really expensive cards when you buy it, because that's when you're getting the most of a discount on that other copy of the card.
Yeah, that's the same argument, and, I mean, you can get a lot of value when you're overpaying with a lot of coins, but I think it's specifically, you can also overpay with the potion, and,
yeah.
You know, a lot of the potion cost cards, at least the ones that are any good, are good because you probably want a lot of them, right? A lot of them get better when you have multiples. And
yeah.
So
we're talking about, like, Scrying Pool and Apothecary.
And Alchemist. And,
yeah.
And even Familiar. Like, all of these cards are really, really great to have a lot of soon. And so if I'm wanting to put Scrying Pools or Apothecaries in my deck, and I hit that four potion, like, I'm going to be really happy because I used that one potion to get two of these cards that are super OP because of their potion cost.
Yeah.
And like, really, Stonemason is one of the very few cards in Dominion that can allow you to break that rule of, like, oh, I see my potion, I get one potion cost card. So
that's
a
true.
Big deal.
Yeah. No, the weird overpay mechanic is definitely gets kind of weird and powerful with Stonemason.
Yeah, so I think potion. That... Yeah. So I think that, you know, even though this doesn't, like, Stonemason by itself doesn't enable, like, a double province turn when you play it, like, all of these things you can do, they're worth building around anyway. To
yeah.
the point where, like, this is such a strong payload card, and it'll payload in the form of gaining cards,
yeah.
that this is something that's worth building around. So, like, I want to hit those high price points one time where, like, this one big turn is going to be super great as opposed to smaller turn.
And
so I'm looking at stuff like opening Baron so I can spike a high price point.
Sure. And don't, of course, get us wrong. Like, nobody is advocating a Stonemason deck. That the point of it is to gain and play Stonemasons. But the support for gaining cards is so good that it's a lot of the time worth jumping through hoops just because it's there. And if you can't figure out some amazing thing you can be doing with the Stonemason, chances are you're not looking hard enough. But yeah, Baron comes to mind definitely for spiking those high price points.
Yeah, like there's Baron, and I think Death Cart. Like, I would open with a Death Cart to. I mean, Death Cart has that synergy also, where if you don't want to play your Stonemason, you can just feed it to the Death Cart, right?
Yeah, definitely, and you could also be talking about Tactician, too. That's a fiver, so that's a little harder, but it potentially enables a huge Stonemason turn.
Yeah, it's the same idea. Oh, you know what other card's really good for that?
What?
Silver.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good card for hitting high price points.
Yeah, and of course anything that lets you net value between turns is going to be good for anything that wants a really big price point. So we're looking at anything that'll give you coffers or maybe something like save or gear.
Oh, yeah, coffers. That's a really good point.
They came in the same set. That's the spoiler.
Oh, snap! Boom!
Yeah, so...
Snapperoo! All right.
Yeah, so... The strongest synergy, I'd say, with that cost reduction is something we haven't hit on, though, yet.
Well, I mean, you kind of said it.
Oh, did I accidentally say it?
Yeah. You meant to say strongest synergy with Stonemason, but you said strongest synergy with cost reduction.
I don't believe you. I don't think I actually said that. So, we're going to bleep that out.
Did say, with that cost reduction is something we...
Yeah, so anyway, what would you say, Adam, is the strongest synergy with Stonemason's gain effect?
Debt cards! Raw!
Yeah,
is that not it?
Yeah, anticlimactic podcast is...
Yeah, so cost reduction.
An anticlimactic podcast.
Alright, good episode.
Yeah, so Stonemason with any cost reduction. Let's talk about that.
It's really good.
It's really powerful.
So, remember when I said you had to pay two extra to get your extra gain? But if you, like, if you, let's say you play Highway, for example, and now everything costs one less. Now, on top of that discount you got for just buying your card, you only have to pay one extra to get the bonus. And now, if you reduce it even further, two or more, like, you're just not paying any more coins to get your extra buy slash gain.
Yeah, it, like, if you make Stonemason cost zero, it's almost doubling your buys, as long as you're willing to have the Stonemason.
Right. So, I want to point out that make sure you don't get too cray, because if you reduce the price of the thing you want to gain to zero, then you can't overpay for it, and that's no bueno.
Yeah, we alluded to that earlier, and it's actually a rules clarification I didn't even know before this episode, but because, makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's this nice little bonus that if you have the cost reduction available to you, and you're going to be gaining a billion cards and a billion stonemasons. It is kind of nice that if you can make stonemasons cost zero, you can just stonemason them and you don't have to gain anything.
That's true. It's kind of like
we did it, guys.
Like stonemason says you have to gain something cheaper. Yeah. So we have. I mean, is what kind of cost reduction do you think is like best with stonemason?
Yeah, so
I mean,
think
any
the,
of it, obviously.
The
right?
star of the show, I think, is Quarry.
Yeah.
And there's a few reasons. First of all, Quarry gives you that the two cost reduction right away. So, like, that's kind of like the value inflection point. Hashtag registered trademark VIP. Value, like, you know, you get a lot of value for reducing things by two.
Yeah.
And it also gives you a penny to spend on whatever else you're going to do this turn. But, like, you can open with a quarry, and that's a big stinking deal. Because now all you have to do is just play your quarry, and now you can do this amazing thing with Stonemason.
That's true.
And also, there's no gotchas. Like, quarry only works on action cards, and Stonemason's overpay only works on action cards.
Right.
So, like, you're never going to be in a situation where you're screwed by that. So, I mean, Quarry is number one primo A-plus star of the show. And I think after that is probably, like, Highway, and then after that, maybe Ferry or something, because you can Ferry the Stonemason and get you. But, like, with Ferry, you're not getting the discount on the other card. So, like, it's not quite as good as other forms of cost reduction.
Well, and the other cost reductions, even though they're quite powerful, we're talking about maybe Bridge and Bridge Troll, are also really good with Stonemason just because cost reduction is so good with Stonemason. But
is that all the rest of the cost reduction in the game?
That's all I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, we got them all.
We got them all. But yeah,
Making Luck, an edge case podcast.
But unfortunately, they're terminal. Not that they're not good with Stonemason. It's just that you have to be supporting that with villages. And Stonemason and a lot of the things you want to do with it are already a little bit terminal greedy a lot of the time.
Sure. I mean, it just requires, that you have a village or like some other insane good support.
It's still almost always worth going for. I mean,
if I'm reducing the cost of things, then I'm a lot happier about buying a stonemason. So yes.
Yeah. So
that's all I had to say on the overpay.
Just to like recap on the overpay and to transition into our next point, it's best in two situations. One, when you're trying to gain out of a pile that's being contested. We hit on that. And two, when the Stonemason isn't a bad or dead card for your deck. So now we transition into what does Stonemason do when you play it on your turn?
Well, I mean, we talked about its use as a thinner.
Right, what does it actually
do? Like, you play it and you gain two cheaper cards than the thing you trashed.
Yeah.
So, like, we've talked about the trashing component, but, like, then there's this gainy component, the gainy bits. And gain two cards. That's really good.
Yeah.
Because if you, like, trash something expensive, you can gain two really good cards.
Yeah. That's the main use for it. I mean, being able to play a card to gain two cards is a level of efficiency that that has to be balanced by having to jump through some hoops for it. Kind of like Develop was.
Yeah, Develop's a great comparison because, like, gaining two things that you really want with Develop is super amazing. And also, it was at its best when you could draw and play those cards on the same turn. Now, that's a little harder to do with Stonemason, because Develop at least top-deck them for you, and Stonemason doesn't. No, however, like, you get a little more freedom in what you gain with a Stonemason.
You do, but also, like, the Develop, it's a terminal action that reduces your hand size by 2 in order to do it. And on top of that, it's reducing your hand size by the Stonemason and probably an expensive card, which meant it was probably a useful card, maybe. So, the gaining effect of Stonemason mid-turn isn't nothing. Like, it is a good thing to do a lot of the time, but I would say that you kind of need to have a little bit more of a plan when you do it. I think the burden of proof for that being worth it is a little higher for trashing something in the middle of your turn and gaining with it.
Hey, I know of cards that are not useful during your turn, but also expensive.
What's that?
Victory cards, like Province.
Yeah, you want to trash provinces with Stonemason?
I could gain 2 cheaper cards.
Why?
And pretty much every card is cheaper than Province.
Tell us, Adam, why doesn't that work?
Well, because trashing a province sucks. Who wants to do that?
This is true, yeah. So
normally the person who has more provinces at the end of the game wins the game.
This is true.
And so when you trash provinces, that's bad. Making Luck, a Dominion podcast.
There we go. there is definitely a card that is in the basic supply that you are almost always trying to trash with the
Curse!
Person. Curse! Yes, no.
But also gold.
Also gold. That's where we're going with that.
Oh, yeah, gold.
Yeah.
Because you can trash gold and it costs 6, and you can gain 2 fibers. That feels so good.
It's really good.
Spending gold is great, but, like, gaining 2 fibers is...
Yeah, gold
We need
is...
that meme with, like, the dude who's walking with that girl... And it's like spending a gold, and then he's checking out the other girl's hindquarters. It says gaining 2 fibers. Let's get Separix to make that meme for us. Separix?
You want
to
get on that?
Yeah.
So the awesome part of that, when you think the reason that that's so good and so efficient is, like, if you were going to build your deck anyway, if you were going to be using your turn to buy cards to build your deck and gain fibers anyway, you could spend the gold to get 3 money. Or you could trash the gold to get the equivalent of 10 money. And
that's
10...
That's so much money.
That's more than 3.
That's like almost 55 more.
Yeah. No, it's really good. But, like, the main reason we keep coming back to gold also is because gold is typically the only card... It's typically the most expensive card that gets named as a thing you gain by other cards.
Yeah, there's a lot of things out there that gain gold specifically.
Yeah. And, like, the things that gain gold name gold, and they don't name the cost of gold, so that's why they're so good for Stonemason.
Yeah, if you want to gain a card that costs more than 5, that's hard to do, unless that card is gold.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, obviously, you're not going to see this coming, guys, but I, the world champion of Dominion, and also maybe Jake, helped. A little, but mostly.
Oh, I thought
me.
You said the world champion of Dominion and of Jake.
I'm the world champion of Jake. We're gonna lay down some fat Dominion wisdom, and fat, of course, is spelled PHAT. Some fat
H.
Dominion wisdom
yes.
for you. I already forgot what it was.
Market Square.
Stonemason has synergy with gold gainers.
Yeah, there we go. The best one we could think of was Market Square.
Why is that?
Well, on the one hand, it's a gold gainer. That's great.
No way!
And
get out of here!
It's okay. Really cheap, and you can open with it. And also, Stonemason trashes cards, and Market Square gains the gold when you trash cards. And
yeah.
It's just a marriage made in heaven.
So, like, a lot of gold gainers require you to jump through some kind of hoop to get the gold.
Yeah.
Well, Stonemason is great at jumping through Market Square's hoop.
Yeah.
That sounded a little dirty.
Don't worry, just keep moving.
Okay.
It's fine.
But but also, like, it doesn't require... like, assuming you were going to play the Stonemason, it doesn't implicitly require an extra action to do it. A lot of gold gainers out there, like Soothsayer or Explorer, they need an action to gain the gold.
Yeah.
And trash... And just revealing a Market Square in itself... isn't going to take that action. And assuming, like, yes, you wanted to play a Stonemason anyway because you're going to trash a gold you have in hand and then gain the things. Like,
right.
You're going to do that anyway, so, like, it's not an additional action on top of that.
And, like, one of the main costs of gaining the gold with Market Square is usually discarding the Market Square for that turn, because it's like, do I just gain the gold, and is that better than drawing a card with the Market Square? But, like, if you're trashing with Stonemason, that was kind of all you were doing with your turn anyway. Did I mention yet that Stonemason reduces your hand size by 2 when you play it? It's kind of killing your turn for doing anything else, so... You know, it's not really a big deal to be discarding the Market Square, too.
Really, but really, I mean, even if you care about your hand size, though, the comparison to some other gold gainer, so, like, the next one in line, I think, is Governor.
Yeah.
It doesn't take an action because it just gives you the action. It also gives your opponent silvers, which are not nearly as good to trash with Stonemason.
Right.
So that's, I mean, the discrepancy between the Governor options... It's
sure.
amplified by the presence of Stonemason because it gains the things.
Yeah.
But also, like, let's say I wanted to gain the gold with a Governor, right? That took a card, so drawing the Market Square, that takes a card. So, like, the comparison there is not any less favorable, assuming
sure.
that you, like, wanted to play your Stonemason anyway. The extra hoop for Market Square is that, oh, I want to play my Stonemason anyway when I have the Market Square in hand. Where Governor, you can, like, gain the gold on this turn and then draw it in and maybe Stonemason it. So you get a little more flexibility.
Yeah, the other reason that Stonemason and Governor are so powerful together and so significant together is that not only is Governor giving you a bunch of gold to gain fivers with, but Governor is also a fiver that you win a lot of.
Yeah.
So it's also kind of feeding itself.
Yeah. So there's both of them. Both of them have a unique synergy with Stonemason that highlights and revolves around the gainy bits of these cards, and the gold gainers really exemplify. Like, the other gold gainers are great, don't get me wrong, but, like, these two, these are, like, Stonemason's BFFs when it comes to gain and crap.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I'd say that there is certainly one other aspect of Stonemason that you need to be aware of every game where you see it. So, like, let's say that for some reason you decide that you're not going to be gaining Stonemasons for some reason or playing them just because they're a bad card. You still need to be very cognizant that Stonemason is out there. Why is that?
Because in a game of Dominion, when three supply piles are
love
empty...
Love each other very... Oh, yeah.
Yes. when three supply piles are empty... The game is over.
Yes. That's a secret win condition. Well, that's a secret end condition that many people forget about a lot of the time.
Either that or they house rule out of the game.
Yeah, that is true. I actually have heard of somebody house ruling out
please
a three
don't,
pile.
Please don't. Do you know how much work goes into making this game? Like, why would you house rule something when, like, I'm sorry.
Just, like, you have to trust us. Dominion is... balanced around the presence of the three pile. That's an integral mechanic of the game.
Do you know how many people, like, play games of Dominion before it's ever published? Before they decide that, like, do you really think they missed something that you caught after, like, 5 or 10 plays?
Look, if you are having more fun with your house rules, that's great for you, but I strongly urge you to think about all the time that went into playtesting. And, like, as somebody who has... like, just recently started doing some of it, like, yeah, it's super intensive, and Adam's done it way more than I have, and oh my god, you have no idea how laboriously Dominion is balanced.
How laboratoriously, that was really dumb. Point is, rules are great, and you know what else is great? Emptying piles of stone.
Yeah,
mason.
So, like, back on track here.
Stonemason
can make that three pile happen probably faster than any single, like, pile in the game. Because, like, at any given point, you just need to understand that, like, the stonemasons could just be gone because you can buy them three at a time and it costs 4.
Yeah.
And also, they can drain other piles out.
Right.
By buying them and you know.
Yeah, so, like, in a two-player game, I really think that pretty much nothing out there enables three piles harder than Stonemason. So, like, you know, when it gets down to the old nuts and bolts, and, you know, things are starting to get real, and piles are starting to get low, normally, at a certain point, something goes off in your brain and says, hey... idiot. That's my voice calling me an idiot. Hey, idiot. Piles are low. Maybe you should do something about that. And when Stonemason's out, you kind of need to twiddle the knob so that that happens, like, 3 times earlier than it otherwise would.
Louder, too. Instead of, hey, walls. Idiot, it needs to be, hey, idiot!
Hey, idiot.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
So, like, the... Yeah, I mean, Stonemason can make those piles just evaporate.
Right. So, I think that pointing out the synergy with cost reduction is appropriate to do here again.
Yes.
Because while cost reduction turns a lot of the aspects of the card up to 11, particularly the overpay, which is relevant here, it really amplifies. I mean, cost reduction already makes pileouts easier,
yeah.
But with Stonemason, it just turns it up to 11. So that's like dousing the fire with gasoline in a sense.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, just remember that when you want to pile the game out with Stonemason,
you
when
have
you're
to
overpaying, you can't gain VP cards with the overpay unless they're also action cards. So like nobles and maybe mill. So, like, Distant Lands isn't going to work because you're not going to be able to play that, right? Unless you got some weird shenanigans.
Right, yeah. So, like, not that you can gain the Distant Lands with Stonemason, but you're not going to be able to play it that turn because you're in your buy phase.
So that when you're, like, playing your Stonemasons to empty piles, make sure you get your VP then.
Right.
Instead of hoping to overpay and get a duchy.
So, like, it's not just about the reason that Stonemason is so dangerous for piles is also just because, one, you can buy it. And 3 cards leave the supply, but you can also play it, and two more cards leave the supply, potentially. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, any given copy of Stonemason, if it's can cause, like, 5 cards to leave the supply over 2 turns.
Yeah, it's a lot of cards.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, and it actually leads me to kind of an interesting question. This isn't one I really have an answer to, but, like, Stonemason definitely requires players to have a strong grasp of the pacing of the game, of, like, who's ahead, and by what kind of lead do you have, and, like, how close is the game to actually ending. But it also enables these explosive decks that want to chain a bunch of cards together. So how important is a point lead in a Stonemason game? I want to say more, but also it's more important to have a better deck, too.
Yeah, having the point lead and threatening the point lead are two kind of different things.
Sure.
In many cases, the threat of a point lead is worse than the execution.
Yeah.
So, like, I have a gold in my deck, and I could Stonemason that into 2 duchies, and I could empty all of the piles, and I could do that. And so, as a result, either you need to already be able to do that, in which case, I guess you won already, or if you're good at the minion, I mean, what else are you going to do? You have to score points. So, like,
yeah,
scoring points is still not a great option, but you're going to find yourself in more situations where you have to do that,
mm-hmm.
just because Stonemason has the higher potential.
Yeah, you'll find in a lot of games of Dominion, as you start to squint your eyes and get a little more aware of what's going on,
your shirt off.
Yeah, a lot of the time, you buy points because you were kind of bullied into it. Yeah, because,
wow, bullied, that's a word.
Yeah, like, you buy points as kind of a compromise because you realize that you had to. It's interesting.
Bullied?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know that I would use that word.
I'm using it, man.
Okay, Making Luck does not endorse bullying of any kind.
Yeah.
We do not support that.
No, unless you're bullying your opponent into buying points before they're ready.
Making Luck does not endorse that kind of bullying.
Yeah, so... That's interesting, and Stonemason's interesting. It's a card that I think it's worth taking a lot of time to try to unlock the potential of, because it's a very potent tool, and it requires a lot out of the player in terms of understanding both kingdom reading and game state.
Yeah. The powerful cards can be more likely to be high skill cards, I think.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Stonemason's real good.
Yeah.
Powerful card.
Well, so as always, we're going to have a kingdom that we're going to be playing over the next week that is going to force Stonemason in, and... Oh, actually, there's one other aspect of this. that looking at this kingdom just reminded me of with Stonemason. And I can cover this in a sentence, which is why it's last. Stonemason's really good with anything that cares how many cards you gained this turn. Because when you play it, you gain 2 cards, and when you buy it, you gain 3 cards. So, spoilers, this kingdom has Monastery, also Triumph. Anyway, moving on.
Good job, man.
Yeah, we did it.
Get those edge cases. Did we leave any out? Shantytown?
Shantytown could trash an action out of your hand, and then you could play the Shantytown.
Boom!
As long as you played
Synergy.
Shantytown previously.
We did All it. Right. We did it, guys. We're so good at Dominion. Shantytown, Stonemason. Hashtag right. Synergy. Just so there's a kingdom.
Yeah, so there's a kingdom, and it's got some cards.
You want to read them?
I'm going to read the cards.
Yeah.
These cards. Monastery, Stonemason, Bridge, Ironworks, Jake of All Trades, Ranger, Shepherd, City, Groundskeeper, and Mint. Our event that we have is Salt the Earth. And finally, one more time for our audio-only listeners, we have Monastery, Stonemason, Bridge, Ironworks, Jake of All Trades, Ranger, Shepherd, City, Groundskeeper, Mint, and our event, Salt the Player Base. So, what exactly do you think is going to be best here? I mean, like, Stonemason, I think, like, without fail, Stonemason is going to be prominent on this board.
Well, without fail, Stonemason's going to matter on a lot of boards.
Well, yeah.
I see City
and
Bridge.
Yeah.
I see City and Bridge, and so City and Bridge is going to be a pretty main focus.
Yeah.
I'm looking for support for that. Stonemason is at the top of the list.
I almost don't want to say it, but, like, I am almost looking at this as one of those boards where you might not open Jack of All Trades.
I would open with a Jack of All Trades.
Stonemason and Monastery, so good together.
Uh-huh.
Not in the opener.
Yeah, so I would open with a Jack of All Trades.
Might open with a Jack of All Trades.
Yep. On a 5-2, I think I still might open with the Jack. I was, like, thinking for a minute of, like, what if I open Mint Monastery, and then I get Mint, and I Mint a copper, and then I buy a copper, and I use the Monastery to trash 2 estates. And, like, yeah, if you get a perfect draw,
that
still
sounds
sucks.
It sounds pretty bad.
Yeah.
So
don't do that. And
yeah.
Mint Stonemason, don't do that either.
I mean, I would...
Don't open Mint.
So, like, Jake of All Trades is always the safe bet to open with. Almost always. I would consider the Ironworks instead. I'm not sold 100%. I mean, I'm opening with the Monastery. That's happening. I'm not 100% convinced that the Jack of All Trades is going to be better than the Ironworks throughout the game.
I am. Throughout the game. When I open with a card, I definitely open with the Jack and I pick up the Ironworks later. Definitely. I mean, I think I want an Ironworks for sure, because, like, you play a Bridge and you play an Ironworks and you gain a City, and that's got to be important. City and Groundskeeper are big cards. You want them. Bridge is also a big card. So, like, Ironworks is a gainer. It doesn't take an action. It helps you do the thing. So, like, I'm going to want it.
Jake of All Trades is also actually a little bit better with the Monastery, because it's slightly more likely to grab the Monastery on its draw, because, like, the Ironworks... So being able to trash 2 cards with Monastery and Ironworks requires you to line the Ironworks up with the Monastery. But lining it up with Jack of All Trades, you have, like, 2 more cards of leeway because the Jack can draw a card, so...
And it can discard a card.
Yeah, so, okay, like, maybe... I'm leaning more heavily toward Jack of All Trades opening here.
Jack of All Trades is a really good card. You should just open it.
It's so hard to find a board where you don't open with it.
Yep.
Yeah, so, Now, like, the opener is pretty obvious here. What do you think are going to be key cards to win the game with?
Bridge, City.
Yeah?
Yep. City and Bridge.
How do you feel like Groundskeeper?
It matters. It's a good card. I'm not sure... I mean, there are going to be some games where it could possibly matter. I mean, Groundskeeper has a little bit of synergy with Stonemason... You can Groundskeeper, gain 2 victory cards, and get a buttload of VP tokens. However, City Bridge can end the game. I mean, if bridges get split, you're going to be doing some of this other stuff anyway.
Okay, so like...
Stonemason has the synergy with Mint as a gold gainer, and you're probably going to pick up a Mint just for thinning, right?
Yeah, so like part of me wants to say that the groundskeepers are going to be more important than they look because... Just because the groundskeeper tends to be more important than it looks, but... Then I think about it, and the presence of City, man, like, when am I going to have time to grab those groundskeepers?
When the cities are gone.
But, like, if when the cities are gone, I feel like the game might be over too quickly to grab the groundskeepers unless I'm gaining and playing them that turn. Which, of course, brings, I mean, we were talking earlier about how you thought maybe you could gain golds with Mint and Stonemason the gold into two fivers.
Right. I mean, I still think there's a possibility of that. It's tough to say because, like, things have to be kind of evenly split in terms of City and Bridge for other things to start mattering.
That's fair, yeah.
And, like, they will matter in that case, but, like, I just think the elephant in the room is the City and the Bridge.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, so, like, when we're talking about the groundskeepers, too, we're talking about City and Bridge already being gone or low, so, like, do you really want to be... flirting down with a third pile.
If you can gain and play at the same turn, like,
yeah.
There's your points, man.
I like it a lot more if you can gain and play, and the only way I'm seeing really to do that is with Bridge and Ironworks, or with...
Good old Stonemason, right?
Stonemason and a gold, yeah.
So putting the gold in your deck might be a pain in the tuchus, but...
Yeah.
But if it's there, I mean, you can do some great stuff. You can mint it and then Stonemason it. Go to town, man.
Yeah, the other thing I'm looking at here is Salt the Earth, and I'm trying to decide how significant I feel like that is. And I'm leaning toward not very, because, like, how often is that the best thing you're going to be able to do with your turn? Because, like, how decisive of a point lead can you really establish early on to make, like, the City Bridge thing not be able to just crush you if it gets any sort of traction?
Yeah, Groundskeeper... adds a lot of potential points into the game, which is most of the reason I'm not warm on Salt the Earth. I mean, you can get a small lead and then run out the clock with Salt the Earth. That's a thing you can do. But, I mean, you can get a million points with Groundskeeper, and I think the deck builds pretty fast here. So I don't really think it's a huge deal.
Okay, yeah.
And also, like, it bridges the point of the deck. It's not going to reduce the cost of Salt the Earth. And so you don't really want to be getting money from other sources. We can just be playing more bridges.
Yeah. So to recap, what we're talking about doing here is opening with Jack Monastery, probably, if we can.
Regardless of opening, I think that's the way I'm going.
I kind of am starting to agree the more we talk about it. I was leaning toward Ironworks, but now I'm thinking the Jack. I might pick up a Stonemason as early as the second shuffle, and then we're transitioning into contesting cities and bridges, and we have a question mark in terms of how good Groundskeeper is going to be. Now, here's another question. How do you feel about the Shepherd Groundskeeper deck? All right, so moving on. gotcha. So, anyway, let us know what you think you would do here. Maybe you see Ranger as more significant than we've talked about, or maybe you just would play this completely differently. Let us know in the comments.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of that, different ways for you to talk to us about this kingdom or anything else related to the podcast, things you'd like to hear us talk about, for example. We have a lot of ways you could do that. You can go to adamhorton.com, and you can check out the resources there. There's a forum there, and there will be threads for every episode, so you can post there if you like that. There's a link to our Discord server.
Yeah, we have a brand spanking new Making Luck Discord server, which is a great place to hang out and talk to great Dominion players about awesome Dominion. I'll be there, too.
Yeah. So you can give us suggestions or feedback on this or any of the other content that we make on any of those channels, right?
Yeah.
We do some other stuff. There's the coaching series that Jake does. You know, whenever we get some videos submitted or whenever we see something that we feel like doing it.
Yeah.
So if you want to take a video of your own play, have someone look at it, send it in. And there's plenty of contact info everywhere. You can get a hold of us however you want. We want to hear from you. We want to interact with you. That's kind of the whole point of this. So please do that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And don't forget to enter the raffle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You may not have that starting advantage that Dylan has, but
that doesn't mean you can't just enter more times than he did.
That's right. That's right.
Because this is America.
This is America. Making luck. An American podcast.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised by how many Dominion players were not American.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, like, I was talking about this in the Discord server earlier. Like, I've never really interacted with, like, a big group of non-Americans before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've learned some things about European folks.
Yeah?
Mostly that German people speak better English than I do.
German people tend to be better at most things than I am, I would say. Like,
well, the funny one is English, because, like, that's not their first language.
And yeah, then, right.
I mean, you've been listening to the garbage spewing out of my mouth for the past roughly 1 hour.
Yeah.
And,
I don't even enunciate anymore. I kind of just let the words run together.
Yeah, like, consonants just take so much work. Why do we use them?
Yeah, it's... Man, I can't be bothered.
I have to put so much effort into talking about, like, Dominion without using the E word. Like, man, I don't want to use consonants.
It's really tricky, and God forbid I use any of Adam's trigger words.
Man, you can get your business done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. Probably gone now, though. We're still talking, so that's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, they brought it on themselves if they stole the video up.
Yeah, or maybe they just have their podcast playlist on autoplay and they're driving and they don't mess with it.
They're just waiting for this to end so that they can listen to the thing they
have. Are you wearing your seatbelt right now?
Yeah, don't text and drive.
Don't look. Put your phone down.
Yes.
We're done. Bye.
So what are we doing for next episode?